for joining us for the final episode in our series On the Brink of Death. We're really excited for this dramatic conclusion that awaits us. This is part of a broader program called Remembering Who We Are, which was born out of a need to give back to the community and anybody who would join us when the pandemic began. And we found that it's independent of the health crisis. We have an existential crisis of really, who are we? Are we living as our true self, as the deepest me, as the soul? So we felt that coming together in this way to make sure we're aligned and really on mission and deepening our understanding of ourselves and our ability to live as we are, to remember who we are, was the most important thing we could do. We try to do that as an upbuild team whenever we come together, and we decided to open up what we call our spiritual start to everyone, and that is what is remembering who we are. Now, it's the year anniversary since we began, and we wanted to do something very special, which is why we invited Satchinandan Swami to join us for this series On the Brink of Death. And the intention there is to really gain conviction in the life of the soul, even in the most extreme situations where we might think it's difficult or even impossible to access. And that has incredible bearing for our own lives and the challenges that we face. If we can, even on the brink of death, get in touch with the soul, that should be very hope-giving and encouraging in our regular lives. So we ask of our culture that there are three things we really value: full-hearted participation, that we are really receptive, we're giving our undivided attention, we're not multitasking. Please keep your video on as far as possible. That would be really wonderful so we can see you and be a community together, and it will help us to be present and absorb much more. Respect, creating a safe and sacred space together, being very mindful of others and respectful. And determination, that we want to live these teachings. We want to experience the soul. We don't want to just hear about it. So that requires determination, that I want to bring this into my life. I want to apply what it is that we're talking about. And that will be really powerful and transformative if we take that approach, guaranteed. The format of the program will be that Satchinandan Swami will speak to us, will tell a story of a life-threatening experience he's had. He's had so many, we couldn't resist sharing them and the lessons that have come from them. So he will bring us into one and bring us out of one with his realizations. And with any remaining time, there will be an opportunity for questions. We will close at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And then those of you who are inspired and able to stay after, Satchinandan Swami will be here for Q&A for another half an hour. So at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time, we will then depart completely. We encourage you to please stay. And again, this is episode 5, the final session. We're in anticipation of what awaits us. Satchinandan Swami is a lifelong monk. For 50 years, he's been practicing on the path of bhakti and has been traveling around the world, sharing his teachings. He's a very, very accomplished meditator and also a kirtan musician. And he's a writer and has, as I said, amazing experiences to share with us. So we turn it over to him. We're very honored to have him with us, and we're very honored to have each of you with us. Thank you for joining us from different parts of the world, and thank you, Satchinandan Swami, for joining us from Germany.
I welcome all of you affectionately to this last episode of On the Brink of Death. I really felt, in preparing my thoughts for this final installment, that over the last five weeks, yes, we have become something like a community, because we are all sitting in the same boat, a boat where we think sincerely, seriously about our own mortality. And as we will see today, that will bring thoughts about our own immortality with it. I will try to be really as punctual as we managed to be in the last four sessions, but if I'm go a little over time, 5 minutes or so, please bear with me, because the subject needs to be completed nicely, and the patient should not jump from the surgical table before the wounds are properly closed. It was in the year 138 CE, where the most powerful man of his time, the Roman Emperor Hadrian, was lying on his deathbed. He was overlooking the Bay of Naples, and he had dictated in the last 2 weeks or so work which has entered into the world of literature as under the title Hadrian Addresses His Soul. And only moments before he actually departed, he dictated a poem which is very difficult to translate. It has only 5 lines, but it really comes to the essence, and it really gives a reason why it is in fact necessary to think about our own death. Every German boy from a good family has to learn Latin, so I will read to you 2 of his lines in the original language, because that will help you to enter it. Animula vagula blandula. And the fourth line, pallidula rigida nudula. It somehow gets to us. And to translate it is I love this translation. Oh, my loving soul, my own, so tenderly, my life companions and my body's guest, to what new realms, poor flutterer, will you fly? Cheerless, disrobed and cold in thy lonely quest, hushed thy sweet fancies, mute thy wonted jest. In essence, he's asking, soul, where are you going now? You little flutterer, you will leave now this body. And he is not very hopeful. He says, you will go somewhere without color, a savage place, a bare place. Hushed are all your fancies now, mute are all your jokes. No? Where are you going? I believe that no one of us should die like Hadrian, with that question, where our next destination will be. Because if you have this question and you are unsure, maybe even afraid and anxious, then you have not completed your life in the proper way. And it's the greatest agony which awaits you. Die prepared. That is a very good encouragement, which I hope will come out of this session, and you will get something in your hands that allows you to lead the soul life, a fully fulfilled, complete life now, and then be well prepared for the final examination of your life. There were many wake-up calls in my own life where I came to the brink of death. And one of them was an almost fatal car crash. I chose from all these experiences this one for the final session, because that is something which could happen to everyone of all of us. Maybe not all of you will go into war countries, and in the midst of the storm of war you will be there, but you commute in your car very regularly, and therefore to bring this home and give you encouragement and support you, I have chosen a situation which is more close to what we are likely to experience. You must know, before I start to talk, that in my spiritual tradition there is a secret understanding. The secret understanding of all the Vedas is that all life in this world is but a dream. There is only a little difference between the night dream and the day dream. And it is particularly this lesson which came out of my experience, which I'm going to share now with you. I was still young. I used to go with my monk friend Adi Shesh throughout the German-speaking areas of Europe in the form of an eight. I would start in the north of Germany, and then I would come down where Stuttgart is, that is center of Germany. Then I would go over Austria into Switzerland, Zurich and all, and then come back and be in the middle of Germany again, Stuttgart. It was here in Stuttgart where I knew a very nice family which I used to visit. He was an engineer in the car factory BMW. I have seen some of these cars in New York as well, BMW. And he was one of the leading engineers, and he would invite many of his friends and of course his family for spiritual evenings where I was invited as the guest. So this particular evening, it was again quite late, I think coming towards midnight, and when we departed, his wife gave me a nice cake with a lot of cream, which I put carefully into our Dodge van. We said goodbye and we were very quickly on the expressway from where we wanted to come on the highway, a fast way. So as we were driving, it was after midnight. I said to the driver, "Can I please take a rest? I'm so tired." And he said, "Yes, you can go back into the Dodge van." We had fitted the Dodge van. We had put a wooden platform there, and under the platform, we stored our luggage. We stored books. We stored two big gas bottles for our stove. And on the wooden platform, I was now stretching out. And next to me was the wonderful cake. I still see it. And I had made a plan. It was my favorite cake, Schwarzwälder Kirschtorte. It's the cake of the Black Forest. It's the ultimate in cake as far as my taste is concerned. I quickly went to sleep while Adishesh was driving. The next thing I noticed it, he was coming to a screeching halt. And I came up and said, what? And he said, "Oh no, I missed the exit, which is going to the highway." So, that's really bad. When you miss that exit, you have to drive another 1 hour in one direction and come back the other hour in one direction. And I said, "There is no traffic. We have not seen any cars here." And then I made my first fatal mistake on that evening. I said, "Turn around on the expressway and then we go back and go up the exit to the highway." My risk, I said very foolishly. If you ask me now how I could ever be so audacious and violate the traffic rules like that, I can say to you only, I have done this only one time more. That was in New York when I wanted to get over the bridge over the Hudson River, and we missed it, and we also turned around on the street, meditating that the policeman would not turn around and see us. But otherwise, I've never made such a foolish decision again in my life. So he turned the car, and this was a little bit the scenario. I've written it down. This was our Dodge van here. We maneuvered it back and forth. It came to this position. Then all of a sudden, we saw another car coming out of nowhere, rushing towards us. And when it was about here, everything turned into slow motion. I don't know if you have ever been in a very, very bad accident. It's somehow our psychology turns time, or we perceive time differently. And I saw the fast car, the other car, coming right into our sight in slow motion, and I could see everything. I could see my anxiety. I could see this at the end, and we have gas bottles in the van, which we used to feed our stove so that we could, make simple preparations. And my dear people, I was so entirely calm that I cannot express it. I do not know. This is something the human psychology does. When you finally meet your death, you meet, some meet it very calmly. And the car just went totally into us. Our van was lifted up and turned around a few times in the air. Then it came crashing down, and all I remember still is how in this time the wonderful cake just vent to the ceiling, bang, and because there's so much cream in this particular cake, it all spluttered down on me. And then I went out. I lost my consciousness. I don't know how long it was. I was awakened, I think, with the loud screaming of the driver, who was totally shocked. He was still alive, and I came from the back of the van, and he yelled at me and said, "We are trapped. I can't move the doors, and it's only moments when this car will explode. This van will explode." So a survival instinct made me take my leg, and I kicked with the heel through the front window. He did the same on his side, and we somehow came out of the front window. I scratched my leg. There was blood coming. Then we quickly ran to the site and a little away from the van, and in total shock, we broke down. At that moment, the car was exploding. Remember, there were two bottles this big of propane gas, which you use for cooking, and a huge flame came out of the front window, which was broken, and it shooted like a tongue into the night sky, and it was it was really that the thing was burning, and we were sitting there, and I must tell you, I was remembering that, is this real? Am I seeing through real eyes? Or is this the afterlife? It felt like a dream of a next life. I was under shock, and so was Adishesh, the monk. Then I heard him chanting the sacred mantra, and I thought, good idea. I also started to chant the sacred mantra. As I said, time was moving differently. The next thing I remember is that there was a little further away a bridge that went over this expressway, and it was full with people looking down at this accident scene where our van, which had toppled, was lying there, and the other car, which had driven in high speed into us, and they were all looking, and soon there was a fire brigade. They came through that exit road, and they came to our car. They wanted to save any living being, any living person inside. And so then I did my second mistake. When I saw them working and trying to get into the car, they had something like a big tongue to open the side doors, but they were unsuccessful. I went over, splattered with cake. I was in my monk dress. It was a little torn. There was blood on one leg. And I said to the people, we are alive. And I still see the eyes of the fire brigade man. He looked at me, and his eyes exploded with rage, and he chastised me. This is not a time to joke. How do you look? You are drunken or what? How is the dress? And there are people dying or already dead. We have to open this car. And I said, yes, but I'm was in this car. He didn't believe me, and he said, just go, just go. He thought I was crazy or something. And then they finally, after a good amount of time, they were able to break into the side door, and they looked, and there was no one inside the car. So the same man came to us. We sat at the side, and he said, are you really the people who drove this car? Yes, we said. Well, no one survives such an accident. We have. Can you give a proof? I said, I don't know how I can describe to you something which you can find. It's my cake. It must be on the roof, splattered on the roof. It was just so crazy. He couldn't deal with it. He looked again, and yes, there was a cake. And then they said, okay, what can we do for you? And I said, just give me a telephone. I need to phone our friend, and he will come with a car and get us. And so our friend came, and he got us. The whole night, my dear people, I was thinking, this could have been your end. This should have been your end. But you are alive. There's a minor thing on the right leg, but you are alive. You're shocked, but you are still alive. I remember myself tweaking myself like this, and I felt the pain, and I could understand, I am alive, I am here. And this is what I have to share with all of you. You are alive now, but it is with every step that you take. I see one karana. Every step which you have taken today, even the one just now, brought you one step closer to your own death. Think about it. Every single step which we are taking, Vipin, Emily, Michael, Tsipi, every single step which you take brings you one step closer to your own death. And there are two ways to go about this. One is you can deny this. You can ignore it. You can store it away. I think this is what Hadrian did, who was totally overwhelmed by this fact that he has now to leave the body and he does not know what will come. Or you can prepare yourself wisely, like a traveler who knows, I will go into the station and then I should know where my train will take me. In spiritual philosophy, you are not willing to deny this. You, in fact, take the fact that you will die as a great, great inspiration in your life to not waste time and to distinguish between that which is essential and that which is a waste of your precious time. Before I come to the meditation and then to my tips how to live a life in good preparation, I would like to tell you my favorite wisdom story, because it makes such a wonderful point about using our life to prepare ourselves properly. There was once a traveler. This traveler is representing you and me. He was going through many new countries, and finally he arrived in the capital town of one particular country, where everyone had assembled on the marketplace. There were thousands of people left and right, and they all looked in the sky. After some time waiting, along with all these other people, the traveler could see there was an eagle who was circling in the sky, and then it came down and the crowd shouted, oh, and the eagle landed right on the shoulder of our traveler. The crowd was enthusiastic. A divination, a sign from above. We have found our new king. The divine eagle came. He looked for him. He found him. And the eagle went away. They took him in great joy on their shoulders and went up the little road which led to the palace, the king's palace. There he was received in great honor. He was given a bath. He was dressed in a nice dress, and he got a crown on his head. And yes, he was the next king. The traveler was quite pleased with these developments. He had left his country with not much money in his pockets, and here he was, the king, with a vast treasury. But there was something which rose his suspicion. Whenever he would ask what happened with the previous king, or if there were any photos or paintings of those who came before him, the people became silent, took on a face like stone. So one day, he was going through the palace park, and he noted a gardener whom he had noted before. This gardener was planting a little tree, a sapling, into the ground, and our traveler, who was now the king of a country, stopped and asked, what is this tree and what fruits will he bring? And the gardener looked at him, his hands were dirty, and he said, Your Majesty, you will never see these fruits. And then he bit himself on his lip. Oh, he had said something he should not say. The traveler said, Why do you say this? Why do you say I won't live a few more years? And what happened with the kings before me? The gardener said, I can't talk about this. I don't know, but if you want to find out, meet me early in the morning, but only after 2 weeks have passed. No one should see that we spoke together. So after 2 weeks passed, the sun was just starting to rise. The king was before the palace gate, and he found the gardener there, and the gardener waved him, come quickly. And they went down to a huge river. Now you must know, rivers usually stand in these wisdom stories for death. They are marking the borderline between one life and the afterlife. There was a little boat. The gardener wrote our traveler, who was now a king, over the river. They came on the other side, to the other side. And then they walked on a path. And after some time, they saw a tree. And on the tree, there were these garments. They were ragged. Crowns, old crowns were there. And inside these garments and under the crowns, there were skeletons. Oh, said the gardener, now I know. They bring the queen, the king, over the river. They drop him there. They become hungry and they go to this tree, not knowing that the fruits are poisonous. They climb out of hunger after some on the tree to eat one of these fruits, but they instantaneously die hanging on the tree. You know, it's a wisdom story. Things happen in an extraordinary way in wisdom stories. Oh, and the gardener said, when 2 years have elapsed, you will also be brought over the river. You will also be hungry in this forest. And you will also, not knowing that these are poisonous fruits, climb the tree, eat them, and die instantaneously. But your time is not yet over. Enjoy the last year or so. And they went back into the boat, and the gardener wrote, on that journey across the river, they had many confidential talks. And when they arrived at the site where the palace was, they had become friends. The king went up into the palace. The gardener was seen one more day in the park, but then he was found missing. No one knew where he was. His wife didn't know. No one knew where the gardener was. The king lived a good life. He tried to make decisions which were just and wise. And then one morning he heard a knocking on the door. It was loud. It was demanding. It was without any considerations, and the door flew open, and the palace guard stood there, armed men. The officer said, come, come now. The king or traveler went out of his bed. He said, can I take my bag sack, which is in the corner? Well, what's in the bag sack? Said the officer. The traveler said, seeds. Seeds? You won't need seeds. Come, leave it there. And they brought him into the boat. The boat crossed. They crossed with him the huge river. And the officer said, you were a good king, the best of all of them, but now I have to drop you. I wish you all the best. Then he returned without the traveler and the king. Now a traveler, very enthusiastically, went through the park, through the path, on the path. He saw on his left side the previous kings or the skeletons of them, but he walked on. He took there was a little path to his left. He took it. He continued to walk. He saw a clearing in the forest, and at the end, a hut. And before the hut was his friend, the gardener. He was kneeling in the earth. He had made very nice plants. There were tomatoes, there were grains, there were everything which you need to live. And the gardener said, "Welcome. Now our real life starts. We have prepared good for this life. Are you prepared? Have you made preparations that when you cross the big river, that you know you will enter into a better life, into a better existence? Can you say you're so prepared that you can walk with confidence in this life, fully, fully inspired by what you live?" The great poet Chanakya Pandit, he was a big writer, he said, "An ignorant person should forget that there is death so that he can live very freely without any burden. But an intelligent person should live every day as if it is his last day, because this will help him to separate the essential thing from the unessential thing." We have started our little journey with a quotation by the American entrepreneur Steve Jobs. And I would like to close also with this quotation. He wrote, "For the past 33 years, I have looked in the mirror every morning and asked myself, if today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I'm about to do today? And whenever the answer has been no, for too many days in a row, I know I need to change something." Good words, practical words, something which we can all do. We anyways go in the morning to brush our teeth and do the other hygienic activities and look into the mirror, and we will look into the mirror. Ask yourself at that time, if today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I'm about to do today? And whenever the answer has been no, for too many days in a row, I know I need to change something. This is very, very telling. And I would like to now give you some practical experience how you can touch that essence in your life, how you can actually look from a spiritual perspective, from an observer perspective into your life, and hopefully get some answers how you can live the essential life. Answers which you all deserve, because you wouldn't come to such a call if you would not be curious, if you would not be willing to explore, if you wouldn't be inspired to make a beautiful garden that you will enter when you, after you have crossed the river of life. Good. We will meditate now. Please sit in a comfortable position. The main thing is, whether you sit on a chair or on a floor, that you sit straight. Because at that time, especially also when you roll your shoulders a little back like this, you create space here in the chest and around your heart. And it will be very, very good for you to breathe properly and to just be open for whatever comes. No? So let us please roll our shoulders a little back. You can pull them to the ears a little. Oops, looks a little awkward, but no problem. We are not here for good looks. We are here to meditate. When you're ready, close your eyes and relax your bodies part by part. Start with the feet up to the legs and to the hip. And relax. Then go to your upper body. The back of your body. The shoulders. Up to the hands. And relax. And finally, your neck, your face, and the inside of your mouth, the tongue. Relax. Now bring your awareness to your breathing. Simply observe your breath as it flows in and out, in and out. Breathe in, knowing that you breathe in. Breathe out, knowing that you breathe out. Let your breath be even, long and smooth. No need to force your breath, just focus on it, and you will see it will become long and smooth. If feelings, images, or thoughts arise, let them pass and simply return to your breathing. Your life has become simple. It's only you and your breath. Bring your attention to your heart space and continue to breathe long, even, smooth breaths. Now let all that is going on in your life gently disappear from your awareness. Your job and your achievements gone. Your plans and concerns gone. Your possessions and titles gone. Your various relationships gone. Set yourself free from the layers that cover who you truly are. Who is that you that is always there? Ask yourself, who am I when everything that is not me is removed? Who am I in essence? Stay in this space and try to become aware of your uncovered self, your pure essence. To help us, we will listen to a verse from the Gita. The self, the true I, is eternal. It is unchanging and ever existing. It is all-knowing and full of limitless bliss. That self has always been there, will always be here. It is always there, ready to be uncovered. Meditate about these truths and absorb the good feelings that come as we connect with our essential nature. Take a slow and long breath. Sit in silence and let the experience of pure consciousness, your soul, sink in a little bit more. When you're ready, please come back to room awareness. Gently stretch your body. Gradually open your eyes. Softly gaze at yourself. Feel open, grateful for the experience. Thank you all very much for participating. On my retreats, when I do these meditations and guide people into these type of experiences, many don't want to come out of that space. They feel, oh, it's so peaceful here, so nice, everything is so clear. And then I have to go back into my busy life with that tremendous thought traffic, joom, 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 of thoughts rushing by. But it's so simple. You can always step back, even during our day. I would like to use the remaining few minutes to give you a sincere recommendation. These are times which seem to call out to each single one of us. You need to change something. Times of changes. Remembering who we are will help us to make the right decisions. And if we do that, it will be very, very good. In fact, the times will work for us. We will be happy that things come down. I do remember when I came out of this car crash, which I shared with you, I was thinking, okay, now this could have been or should have been normally your end, but it was not. So you have a new lease on life. How will you live it? You are the captain of your ship. You are able to make your decision. You have the ability to choose. In this way, all the experiences which I shared with you, I was very fortunate that you were interested to listen, were in retrospect my greatest friends. They helped me to come to the soul life. Whenever I'm requested to tell people how to live a spiritual life and how to make the decisions and the choices from there, I give them three tips which are based on the tradition but also on the application of the tradition. I call them the three P's. One is philosophy. Practice is the second, and people is the third. What do I mean? Try to read in the wisdom scriptures. Try to take part in programs like Upbuild. It will give you the good orientation in your life. Then eventually try to pick up a practice. When you notice, for instance, that you have become a little immobile and a little weak and you need to sleep more, and you have developed huge amounts of unhealthy fat, then you need a practice, some exercise routine. So to come into your healthy spiritual life, you also need something that you do on a regular basis, uninterrupted. I'm sure that the people from the Upbuild team can give you good suggestions what to do. Practice will help you to become what you want to become. And finally, people, have the right type of association. Association which uplifts your thinking and your moods. And in this way, your life will be excellent and you will live the whole, the soul life. You may not need these extreme experiences which I tried to share with you, but I thought they are maybe helpful to make you aware that crises can be turning points and can help you to look really for the essential life. With this, I want to close. It was a pleasure to be with you. In fact, I looked forward to each Wednesday where I could have your good association on the internet. I wish you a good good life. I would be happy if this has inspired you to move forward and take your next steps. Thank you so much for being here on this program, and all the best.
Thank you so much, Satchinandan Swami, for being with us for these last 5 weeks and bringing us on the brink of death safely and coming out with jewels of wisdom. It means the world to us. Thanks to everyone who has shown up and been so heartfelt in their presence. And we hope that this has benefited you tremendously. We look forward to more. Not only does Satchinandan Swami have more experiences on the brink of death than just what he shared, but he also has many more life-giving experiences. So we hope to have him back with us very soon. We also invite you to stay with us on Wednesdays for our weekly gathering of Remembering Who We Are. Please join us to keep living the life of the soul. We also have other workshops that you can find out about on our mailing list. So please stay tuned for workshops with Upbuild. And Satchinandan Swami also has a Facebook page where you can hear more from him. He has amazing programs that he's giving online regularly, which we would highly recommend. So you can visit him on Facebook and in other social media platforms. And those of you who asked questions, we will do something, as Satchinandan Swami had promised, to try to respond to these questions if your question didn't get responded to in the course of this series. So stay tuned about that as well. So we want to let you go. Thank you for being patient, and thank you for being with us through this series. Very, very grateful. And now, for those of you who can stay on, we have a little more time with Satchinandan Swami. So take good care. And I actually have a bunch of questions. I don't know if I should ask all of them, but I want to go back to the experience, first of all, with the car crash. So were you, I mean, the first thing I'm thinking about is what happened to the other people in the car that collided with you, and what was your experience there? And also, how did you work it out with Adi Shesh afterwards? What did that change your relationship? Was it complicated? And you also mentioned that you made mistakes. How did you deal with those mistakes? Because we all make so many mistakes, and these were very high stakes. And you'd mentioned in a previous episode about having the inner critic. So how did you work with all of this?
Thank you very much. Your questions are very good and important also. I did not really... of course, the first thing which... when the sense came back, you must know, the moment we just broke out of this car, and then the car exploded with this fire. I mean, the car did not explode, but the gas bottles exploded, and there was all this fire. It was just such a overwhelming scene. The nerves were really... shattered. And this is what I want to say. When these near-death experiences come, or these on the brink of death experiences come to you, you can't really think so clearly. What kicks in is your that which is really which you are committed to. Like I began to chant mantras to calm myself down first of all. When I had the sense to look for the other car, you know, the person who was in that car could be taken out of the car, and the ambulance had gone already with him. It went very fast. They really knew what to do, and they were right there. I made obviously contact with him, normally we would have been really fined like anything, because we did the mistake, and we also said it. We admitted it right on the spot. We told. I told to the policeman it was a foolish mistake. But he was drunken on the wheel. You know. And if he would not have been drunken, he would have been able to pass on the other, you know, there is next to the road, there is a side. I think in America you have that also. So I met him. He was really bandaged like everything, but he survived. And he, of course, asked, how did the car come on the middle of the road? And I said, it was my mistake. I'm really sorry. I was sleeping, and I woke up from sleep, and my mind was hazy. How I dealt with my own mistake, I said, what a fool. I'm living with such a fool. He's called Satchinandan Swami. I was really like this. But then also something else came in, and I want to really offer this as a suggestion. My dear people, all of us make mistakes. If they are not done from a place where you want to hurt another person, when they're just human arrows, it is not good to stay with them indefinitely. You can only do at each single moment of your life the best that you can do. And you will make mistakes as much as the day will turn into the night. Your right decisions will turn into wrong decisions. This is a life in this world. And what you can only work at, you cannot work at not making a mistake. You can work at the place of your intention, your character. And that is done by spiritual practice. And then this will not save you from making mistakes, but it will make you, it will save you from making mean mistakes where you try to inflict, where you are inflicting suffering upon another purposefully. If the person would have died, I would have carried this with me in this life, and it would stuck as a wound, maybe an incurable wound. I asked the person, are you angry at us? And he said, what can I say? You made a foolish decision. So did I, by drinking so substantially that I was not in my reactions were not there. I would have seen you if I would not have been drunken. He was not a very high developed person. I still thought it is good if I give him a good amount of money, because he could not work for a month or so, and so on. And I really made the mistake. When you make a mistake, try to smoothen it up so that there is no harm and no hurt for others. But don't let the guilt feeling that you made a mistake kill you. I don't know, have I answered all your questions? It was about 5 questions at once, and I...
This was great. The only other question is, how did it affect your relationship with Adi Shesh?
Yes. Well, he is a monk who knows driving. And I said afterwards, never listen to me again, because I'm a non-driver. I do not know how to drive. Also, I do not know many other technical things. I'm somehow not such a technical person. So I said, never listen to me again. Make your decisions. I'm very sorry. But he forgave me. But I think I needed to say that, which I said afterwards. You know, when you make mistakes, you should always learn your lesson. We are sitting in the classroom of God. Successes and mistakes are equally important lessons.
This is so helpful. Were you going to say something more?
Not on this. I'm waiting for other questions.
So we have a question from Shiva Rajesh Kastian. How do we have to look at these tough experiences that happen to even good people?
Yesterday, a very good friend of mine died from COVID-19. Days before his departure, he said, breathing, I can't breathe. Breathing is so difficult and painful. He was on oxygen, but this type of disease prevents the saturation in the blood, which is required for the organs and everything else to function when you get it heavy. And so he died, and there was high discomfort, because the doctors decided to not put him out, you know, because they hoped that he would be able to come back. Afterwards, his friends sat together, and we asked ourselves the question, how is it possible? This monk, I think some of you on the call, maybe two, Hari Prasad, you will know him, Pankaj Angri. This monk was such a good person. He did never judge anyone. You would never hear any judgment. He was there for everyone, day and night. We asked, why did he have to suffer like this? He was such a good person. And these were the answers which we came to, two answers. First of all, suffering is relative. There are people who suffer for many, many months, the most excruciating pains, physical but also mentally. And this suffering which is there in the life of a good person, which seems to fall from the blue, is there for a very good purpose. The purpose is all of us in this world who come here have a little karma to be here. We all come with a burden of karma in our life. The law of action and reaction that takes care that from previous actions, boom, the reactions come. Or, yes, either previous actions in this life or even going further back. We all are under this law that we make an action and eventually a reaction will come. Even the good people have done things. And by going through them, through these reactions, these heart reactions, they are actually purified in their heart. They are purified in the sense that the burden is taken away from them. They come out a little lighter, a little freer. The karmic debt has been paid. So yes, this is the reason. I have seen a lot of things. I have related this to my unfortunate birth. I took birth in Germany as a child of someone who was very active in the Second World War, taking part in all the things which the Nazis are rightfully accused for. And it was not by chance that I took birth in this family. I must have been, as you would say in New York, a heavy guy. And I came, and therefore I've always felt great relief. And do you know what? When you are on the spiritual path, those karmic debts which you are asked to pay are not so overwhelmingly heavy. You get the strength from that inner place which has been opened by your spiritual practice to endure, to forbear, to forgive, and to go through your examinations, your karmic examinations, with grace and with inner strength. That is stated in the wisdom texts.
Thank you. I wanted to find out from you how you were able to take this experience of the car crash and reset yourself to live more your soul's life. And how that was different from other experiences on the brink of death. What was it that really triggered this one to take you into uncharted territory?
I will answer this question by removing a very common, common mistake. Many people who come to spiritual life think that the progress is something like this. Oops, let me see. Can you see it? Yes. What? Yes, we have a better pen here. You can give me the ink pen, please, which will make a better line. I will try again. You think when you start, you are on zero realization, and then as you go on, it only gets higher and higher and higher until you are self-realized. So here it is. Ooh, very clear. This is what many people see, think. But as they go on their spiritual life path, they find out an image like the second one. This one is more true. Yes, they make a lot of spiritual advancement. They come and they move up. But then, oops, there was something which has not yet been fully understood. And they come a little down and then they continue. And in this way, it is very good as they go. They move in zigzag ways up. But as they move on in their spiritual life, I need another piece of paper. I'm experiencing some drawing joy. This type of scenario will imagine, will evolve or emerge. They start somewhere, they overcome a little problem, then they see it from a higher perspective. I can't really, it's difficult for me to move properly. They go in a spiral, upward spiral, and they review from the level the same situations, but they review it from a higher level. Yeah, with more insights, with more spiritual strength, with more realization. So I needed a few lessons, and each time it became more clear to me. It didn't, and I know that in the last hour of my life, when I'm finally leaving this body, and I move on, I will think, oh, this is what it means that I'm an eternal soul, a traveler. Ah, now I really understand. I understood something when I was younger, and something when I was in Serbia and I was bombed, and I understood something here and there. And now I understand fully. This is what it is. Mathematics go more complicated, more complicated, more complicated. So this is what it means to be in the school of human life. It's a grand chance. And it's fascinating. And when you live the spirit life, you will make so many more realizations than if you don't live it. With the spirit life, you will decode all the secrets which are put on your path. Thank you for your very good question.
Amazing. Thank you. We have a question from Vipin about the story that you told with the king preparing himself. So how were the gardener and the king preparing themselves over the 2 years? And what are the tomato plants and the other fruit trees?
Vipin, you are a detailed investigator. Well, let me decode the story for you. The traveler represents the individual soul who comes into a life form, in this case, the body of a king. He was a king. But his time is limited. Here, here 2 years were given. If it is 80 years or 100 years or 20 years, it's relatively brief in comparison to the eternal quality of the life of the soul. So in that in the story, wisdom story, the king began to wonder about existence. Why will I not see the fruits of the tree which the gardener has put into the palace garden. Oh, it means I will be only here for a short time. I want to find out what comes after. So they were crossing the river of death. They were seeing the death. And the king, the traveler who was the king, had a good talk with the gardener. And the gardener said, okay, you will, let's make some preparation. You will also be brought over the river like everyone else. But let us make some preparation so that we have a good life in the afterworld. It's a mystical story, you know. It is, so it changes levels of understanding. So building here, doing spiritual practice prepares for what comes then. In India, they have a lovely little practice. You will smile about it. You go to a holy place, a holy mountain, and then you take little rocks and you pile them in such a way that they make a little stone house. And this reminds you that because you did this pilgrimage, you will now you have prepared yourself a new house, a beautiful house in the next life, in the spiritual life. I've built many stone houses already. Small thing, they're big like this. You take the rocks and you need a little balance and a little sense of architecture. And then they look very crude, but with it you want to exercise that, yes, I'm preparing. I'm preparing by this pilgrimage, which I've just done to this holy mountain, for my house in the afterworld, the good house. That is the story. Thank you for asking, Vipin. Thank you for asking.
Maybe we'll just ask one last question.
Yes.
This is from Diksha Ahuja. Even if we know we are dying at every moment, still we fall into an inactive zone of life, failing to take some real steps to change ourselves. How can we overcome this?
Only if you develop a new perspective. When you are stuck in life, in one situation, you need to look at the same situation from a new perspective. If you don't look from a new perspective, you will not have that impulse which is required. This new perspective often comes when you meet spiritually minded people and discuss with them. And all of a sudden, you look anew. To find inspiration and enthusiasm, which is necessary in your life, is not possible if you continue to look with the same perspective. It is simply not. You need to find a new perspective. You need to realign, for instance, with your spiritual goal. Therefore, in old wisdom traditions, they would constantly leave their houses and go on pilgrimages. Or they would visit a temple. The temples were so to say, or holy shrine or anything, they were places where you could refill your enthusiasm and become strong again.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you, Satchinandan Swami. We can conclude here. We have boundless gratitude to you for being with us and sharing yourself so fully and enriching us with your spiritual wisdom and perspective. And thanks to everyone for being with us and sticking it out through the Q&A and contributing to the Q&A. It really is wonderful. We wish you all the very best, and we hope to see you really soon. If not for remembering who we are next week, then hopefully we get to have you in the near future. Take good care. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And bye-bye. All the best.